live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield and Company.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying.
Yeah! All right, here we go. Friday. Reno. Vegas. Fun. Yep, Cofield here at Lotus Broadcasting in Reno. Treasure Island is the spot on Fridays for Cofield and Company in Vegas. Greg Salerno is on the scene. I screwed you over, didn't I? I screwed you over with the confusion of the beginning of the show. You had more time than you thought you did, and you could have ordered food, and you have not done it. I haven't seen you eating.
You didn't screw me over.
We got to streamline this process, or are you just not eating during the show anymore?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I just randomly get in a zone and give bad takes, and, you know, I'm not hungry, I guess.
The takes have been good today. Adam Hill's coming up in about 25 minutes. We'll go behind the patch, get some inside dope on what the week has been with the coordinators and more on Pete Carroll and the Raiders stuff, and then also some Super Bowl, because Adam will be on the road at Super Bowl 59 with the RJ, and we'll get into some of the other elements around the game on Sunday. I have a quick food take. I'm not going to call the place out, but I did have a bad experience at a place that I've been to here like four or five times, my last time up in Reno. Do I go back to the well and trust the first four times and just say, hey, the fifth was a fluke?
National place?
No, it's actually a local place.
Okay.
I like it. They're known for they're a meat place.
Okay.
So they're big on steaks, but the steaks are like, it's a bar. The steaks are like 37 to like $60. Like they have one of those rotating grills right out front.
Right.
So it's just the eye candy. You're just watching the steaks go around, the flames come up. But they're really big on burgers, and their burgers are, you know, supposed to be premium meat, and they're about $24. So I'll just tell a long story short. Last time I came, it was on an off night. Bar's pretty empty. Sit at the bar. This happens in Vegas. You're sitting in front of a machine. The bartender will ask you to move as some players come up. That happened. So I moved, and then they kind of lost track of me. I took the beer, moved, and this was like 10 minutes after I had ordered a burger, and then they thought I just ditched. Like, why would I ditch? And I was sitting off at a table off to the left of the bar. The burger took forever to come out. It came out. It was cold. I was like, hey, can you get me another burger that's hot? And they're like, yeah, we can't make you another one, but we can, like, reheat it. And I don't know. It kind of set me off. Now, the burgers are expensive.
Yeah. No, I would never go there again in my life.
Okay. One bad time, huh? Maybe
not
server error?
Not because it went bad time, yeah. But because of when you asked for a solution and their solution was to go microwave it instead of just giving you a new burger, that to me shows, you know, I would deal with it if it was like, oh, okay, this is bad. And they're like, oh, sorry, sir, and they made you another one.
Yeah.
That's totally different. Hell no. You're going to go back in there and they're going to microwave you. That's cool. Well, I mean, what is that? No.
Well, looking back, I should have pulled what I normally pull, which is I'll get a little irked and then I'll just throw money at the problem and be like, you're not stopping me. I should have just said, you know what, take that burger that's cold and just throw it out. I'll pay for another one, and I'll pay for the first. I do it almost to stick it to myself.
No. No way.
I try to make them feel guilty, and then you know what the reaction is? Okay. We don't care.
Yeah. Well, it's like there's a cable company in town, and somebody's like, hey,
cable
man,
company.
If you don't like your price, just call them and tell them you'll quit. So I called them up, and I'm like, look, if you don't lower my price right now, I'm canceling everything. They're like, okay, do you want to cancel tomorrow, or when do you want this off?
And that was my experience every time with satellite TV. Everyone I talk to, but which, you know what, in the end, if I get a unique experience at a restaurant or with a satellite company, it's probably me.
Right. Man, I don't, dude, no way, though. You're,
like maybe I was a jerk. Maybe my tone was not good.
Nah, you're good. I would never go there again.
But like Vegas, as a casino town, this place has a lot of good options for eats.
Yeah, of course. Reno? Oh, yeah, they have actually really surprisingly good food there.
I'm glad you. That's a little pep talk. You like that, Griffin? I needed that.
Yeah.
I'm not going.
Just a little tidbit, though, for you boys. Unless you're going to one of these fine dine, like five-star Michelin restaurants here in Vegas, the common server is going to have that same response to you. I know for a fact when I was a server, anybody who's complaining about the food, you know, you just, in your head, you go to a different place while the gentleman in front of you is screaming in your face. You just go somewhere else. You disillusionate, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it, because you're going to get it from both ends. You're getting yelled at by the customer, and then you know when you go in the back, the chef or manager is going to be like, no.
I mean, unless you know how to play the game as a server.
What's the game?
Yeah. Oh, I go over to, I get yelled at, get ripped a new one by the table. I go back to my chef and I tell him, oh, this crazy guy, he ordered this, but he's saying that he was supposed to have that and have cheese and it was supposed to be cooked this way. And it's just, he's being ridiculous. Well, all the while in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, I wrote that down and I still didn't put it in.
You screwed it up.
I screwed it up.
Great. Now some guy got like a thigh steak because of you.
Oh, there's like 50 people in this city who are out over the age of like 50 and 60 who can claim that they got a chance to yell in Griffin Kemp's face.
Now, I saw the movie Waiting. If I ever complain about anything, I'm never eating there after I complain. I'm sorry. There's no way they're making me another one. There's no way I'm getting extra food. Nothing. I want money back or I leave. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know. I try to be positive, pleasant with servers because I know, you know, their jobs aren't easy. But then there's but there's also a point where now in this era, we are paying more for food than ever. And, you know, when it used to be like a $8 burger, that's one thing. When the burger's starting to move up to like $27, then I got to be a little bit demanding. And the one thing, really the only, there's a lot of things I would ask for at a restaurant. But the only thing I really am intense about is I love hot food.
Okay.
I don't know how, well, you say that, but I think there are people out there who will eat lukewarm. Like restaurants, I get lukewarm food all the time. I didn't mean spicy. I want it hot.
But you mean like if it's supposed to be hot, it needs to be hot. Like you'll eat a sandwich that's cold, but if it's supposed to be hot,
of course,
you want it hot.
Oh, if I get a burger or a steak, like, and you know, it comes out lukewarm, I understand the steak's got to sit a little bit, and you know,
I get it.
But still,
right? Pizza's the only one that could be lukewarm to me. I'm fine with pizza sitting for a minute. I don't care.
Well, I would say that at the top of the scale, like at the hottest of hot, you're also like annihilating your mouth if you're trying to eat it well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're just going to crush
the roof of your mouth comes off like, you know, a glove or some skin.
It's an extra layer of cheese.
That. Yeah.
Salerno, Treasure Island, Cofield, hanging out here in Reno, getting ready for UNLV and Nevada tomorrow. 7 o'clock start, 6:30 with Running Rebel warm-up. Matt Neverett and Curtis Terry are on the call. So a couple things going on around the National Football League to start out with here before we head off to Adam Hill in about 15 minutes to find out the week that was with the Raiders. I told you yesterday when you sent this in, Griffin, the story about Cam Newton, MVP or Super Bowl ring, that this would be the freaking rage to close this week, especially this week, because Greg, as you've seen in Sports Talk Radio, and I'm sure maybe you watch a little more stuff than maybe you used to with Sports Talk, sometimes the producer, I'm going to blame another producer, not the host, sometimes the producers at the end of the week are like, crap, what are we doing? I got to find something, man. We've been beating the hell out of this game over and over again. Oh, Cam Newton. The guys will yell at each other about this, or I'll make them pick sides. It's an incredibly lazy topic, but we did spend 5 minutes on the show yesterday, but we didn't have a great take on it. Because it was 3-0. All of us said Super Bowl for sure. Screw Cam Newton. The MVP is an individual award. If you win a Super Bowl, people will remember that forever. You actually think that Cam Newton's right?
Oh, he's 100% right. It's ridiculous.
What?
You're crazy.
I cannot believe what Skip Bayless and these idiots have done to the sports narratives now, or rings. That's a team accomplishment. Dude, Doug has a ring. I mean, I love Doug, but he's not winning an MVP in the Hockey League. Okay, I'm sorry.
Like, Doug has a ring. Doug who and Doug, what ring does he have?
Doug has a ring from the Knights when they won the Cup.
Yes, Doug who works at Lotus Broadcast.
Yes! Okay. I love Doug. Doug's a great guy. But Doug's not going to be out there playing front man, you know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah, but no one knows that.
But
no,
anybody can get a ring. Get a ring.
When we talk about it, it's not the ring itself. It's not the material object. It's the memory on your legacy that you actually, Super Bowls are really hard to win. There are unbelievable quarterbacks who don't have Super Bowl rings. There are great NBA players. I mean, right now, we got this era where we've got freaking, look around the AFC, Lamar Jackson, Burrow, and let's throw up Justin Herbert could go down as freaking Barkley, Carmelone, and Pat Ewing, right? Because Mahomes is around, they're never going to win. Winning Super Bowls does matter when you're a great player with your legacy. I mean, I'll say it again. I said it yesterday. I have no idea who has won MVPs, how many. Great. Congrats. In the moment, it's awesome. On the gambling front, awesome. People don't remember that for the most part.
Dude, winning a regular season MVP is so much harder than winning a Super Bowl. It's the most ridiculous.
No, it's not.
Deion Branch has a Super Bowl MVP.
Well, I didn't say Super Bowl MVP. I said winning a Super Bowl versus a regular season
MVP. He won a Super Bowl, and it was an MVP. He was the best player in a Super Bowl. You think he's better than Cam Newton?
That should have been the follow-up. That should have been the follow-up question to Cam Newton. Hey, what was harder, winning the MVP or your attempt at trying to win the Super Bowl, Cam?
It was one game, though. One game means one. I understand the Super Bowl means more when you win as a team. I understand that's the goal. But for an individual player, one game where one guy, Robert Horry's better than Patrick Ewing now because he has 30 rings or whatever, that's the silliest topic. I don't even understand it.
No, I'm just saying, like you just said, it's one game. It's not basketball, the seven-game series. It's one game. It is
but it's
precise.
Like
for an MVP, guys who have won the MVPs, every single game they played wasn't fantastic. They had some either bad or, you know, very mediocre, medium-type games mixed in there for their seasons.
So, it's all, by the way, when you win a Super Bowl, it is a team effort, but you had to win. Like,
right.
Greg Salerno sitting at the press box at the Super Bowl doesn't award you the win. MVPs, when you think about it over the years, many times are cool storyline and are you friendly with the media. So if you're a jackass, then you're behind
really?
The eight ball. If you've won two in a row, then you're behind the eight ball because they won't give you a third. They look for fresh people. There's so many things that go into, because at the end of the year, there's like seven guys who had great years and their teams won. And then there's some arbitrary nature by which they pick the MVP. And that's why also when you look back, again, I don't remember who's got MVPs, but you're like, wait, Michael Jordan didn't win 14 of them?
I think it's a shame, honestly, that we even talk about, because like Dan Marino to me, this is the reason why Dan Marino doesn't get the love he's supposed to get. Dan Marino.
From who?
Is a better quarter. From anyone. Who puts Dan Marino on their Mount Rushmore anymore? Nobody. It's all like, oh, I don't know. Is it Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer?
If that person came on this show, they would get brutalized to the point where they would cry. Anyone who would come on the show and say, you and I are like, Dan Marino, absolutely, without debate, was a better quarterback for his career than Eli Manning. If you're arguing that, you're either
maybe
ignorant,
I went a little too far. I might have gone a little too far with Eli.
No, but that is.
But there's guys.
I understand that. That is the example of, no one does that. See, I think, and I have no idea what people in this. Well, I do have an idea. What people think in this era, winning is very important for the great quarterbacks, but it is not going to. It's not going to have, you know, Joe Burrow like, man, he didn't win a Super Bowl. He's definitely 43rd of all time. Eli Manning's there at 32. Like, people know Joe Burrow blows an Eli Manning. And Manning is a good example because it's not a one-off. It's not a Trent Dilfer. You know, it's not only the defense was awesome. It's not a Brad Johnson. Like, these guys are great. They're going to get their due. But that next level of adoration, it is important to win a Super Bowl.
It is important, but I'm just saying, if you're the best, the MVP is the best player in the league that year, usually. I mean, that's kind of how the awards turned into. To say you were the best player in the league versus I was on a team that won a Super Bowl, to me, I know that we've conditioned ourselves to believe it's better to say the other. To me, I'd rather be the best player in the league. Sorry.
So on the coaching carousel, it's pretty much come to a stop. Saints just have to figure out between these last two, and we'll see. Maybe the step is just, you know, Super Bowl's over and Kellen Moore's going to be the guy, or is it Mike Kafka? The list of hires, I have it in front of you on the rundown. I put together rankings of the biggest potential of a bad hire disaster.
Right.
I don't have much of an argument for anyone else other than the number one slot being filled by little shoddy, Brian Schottenheimer. I was excited about the possibilities of this guy Liam Cohen, but he has turned out to be kind of a weird guy. Can you play this clip where he really – it's like he doesn't understand – there's lack of self-awareness, like as if no one heard about how he managed the move from the Bucks to the Jags. We'll explain that, but he's real big on, everything's about communication and honesty. Fire this.
That's really what this is going to come down to, is honesty. I want to surround ourselves with people that are going to be able to tell you hard truths, be able to show you your blind spots, because that's really, like I mentioned, where growth occurs, when you can truly be yourself and be honest with looking in the mirror, knowing that that process to get you there was clean and it was right, and the results will speak for themselves.
Okay, but he's also the guy who committed to the Bucks after he got annoyed with the Jaguars that the GM was going to stay around. Jags then coaxed him by getting rid of Trent Baalke, the GM. The day he is now renegotiating, or started back up the negotiations with the Jaguars, a day after he committed to the highest deal ever for an offensive coordinator with the Buccaneers, he tells the Bucks, sorry, can't make it in today, family sickness. And then 2 days later, he's doing Duval, whatever that is. And I like the enthusiasm, not embarrassed to kind of play to the crowd, but, bro, you lied about the day you were out while you were negotiating, and then 2 days later, you're like, it's all about honesty. It's all about trust. What?
Well, if he'd been to Jacksonville, it sounds like he's going to fit right in. So.
I guess, man. And maybe that's the thing. His saving grace is that the Jacks media will mostly be nice to him because they just want to cover a winner, and they're not going to, you know, freaking ride him into the ground. I can tell you, in a lot of cities where jobs were open, this is a death knell almost from the beginning. Like, you do this in Chicago. You do this if you're the head coach of the Jets or the Patriots or the Giants or the Eagles. I don't know if you ever get past it unless you're going like freaking 13-4 every year, because people will never forget that you're touting honesty 2 days after coming up with a nonsense lie to not be in contact with your bosses who just, like, genuflected and gave you a giant deal. What a weird move.
It's like those people that take a new job and then, like, take a week off, like, the next week after they get a new job or something at work. You're like, dude, you just got here. You can't go 90 days without taking a day off. Like, that. But, hey, can I push back on your list for a second?
Yeah, let's read the whole list. So, number one, this is from least successful to, I guess, safest. Dallas with Schottenheimer, Liam Cohen, too. He's a Jags. Ben Johnson, Bears. Aaron Glenn, Jets. Pete Carroll, Raiders. Mike Vrabel, Patriots. And then I have the Saints at... I have the Saints as the safest choice with an unknown coach.
Probably the guy who's being distracted right now.
You're going to push back with what? You're just going to go by their ages and Pete Carroll's one?
No.
You ages?
No. I love Pete Carroll. He's a very young man. First of all, number one, I'm moving way down because no one expects him to do anything. So how could you be a flop if everyone already thinks you suck and is crying and they're putting memes out, eliminated already? And all. So, I mean, nobody – if Dallas wins one game next year, then they'll be happy after everything we've heard about this guy already. So, I mean, that I would move down a little bit. Now, you're going to kill me here, Griffin. And I've been touting Ben Johnson like crazy all offseason. But I think Ben Johnson's the biggest boom or bust on this list. I know that's not like the point of the list. But I think because the success of the Lions wasn't biting kneecaps. It wasn't, I'm the CEO of this team. I'm delegating. I'm doing. The Lions were those little intricacies, the plays, the things he was doing. Is he going to have all day to do that now? Is he going to have his entire time spent just on creating these awesome little plays? Some of those plays they did against the Commanders, I know they lost, were amazing. I mean, people were just like, you know, people were salivating over Ben Johnson all game watching some of those plays. Is he going to be able to have time to do that? Is that what he's going to be concentrated on? And I think that's the biggest boom or bust, because we don't know. He is, I know, and you said this last week, he is kind of weird. Like, when they interview him and stuff, he's kind of like, I don't know if that's a CEO kind of guy. So that's the only thing I'm saying. I think he'll be successful, but I wouldn't be surprised. I think that he's the biggest boomer bust on that list.
I'm just going to come out and say you both are making me absolutely sick. First of all, Steve, you got Ben Johnson more likely to bust than your boy Aaron Glenn with the Jets? Come on now. Come on. We have 50-year-old Aaron Rodgers behind center. Let's remember that. Second of all, what do you mean? Of course they're going to have all those intricacies with them in Chicago. Who do you think came up with them? Who do you think is the one who wrote up the script and said, hey, we are going to run this today. Hey, Jared Goff with the noodle arm, we are going to run this, and you are going to be an MVP candidate at times.
Yeah,
that's
but
who
Griffin,
we got.
You played, Griffin, you football, though, and I've played at lower levels, obviously, but you know You don't spend – these players spend 90% of their time with position coaches, with the guys actually drawing up the plays. They don't sit there with the head coach all day. If the head coach is not directly with the players, it's going to change the effect on the team. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm just saying we haven't seen him do it yet, and I think it's a totally different an offensive coordinator.
I agree, but at the same time, there's models. There are models he can look at. Go look at San Francisco. Go look at the Rams. Go look at, hell, even go look across the division at Green Bay. The head coach, who's really the offensive mind of the team, there's a way to do it. They've gotten it down to a T. I am not concerned about that one bit.
That was an interesting debate technique. Griffin played college football at Utah, Cal Poly, and JUCO. Salerno was like, obviously, I played at, you know, lower levels. Are you comparing where your high school, what was it, Ronkonkoma? What are you?
I played high school football, and I played Pop Warner. I'm just saying.
Now you went right to Pop Warner.
But I'm not saying, like, that has nothing to do with what I'm saying. No, at all levels,
I get it.
It's delegated down. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that I was playing against guys that, you know, Ben Johnson's going to be coaching.
I'm very interested to hear and see Ben Johnson's personality in being a head coach.
Yeah.
So I think there's – listen, this again, this goes back to communication and how you present yourself and if people are buying it. So right. I'm still trying to figure out if Ben Johnson's rah-rah guy, if he's true nerd guy. Now, Mike McDaniel is the ultimate – nerd guy, plus he's super sarcastic, and when you're not winning, that I don't think that flies as much. And I know Ben Johnson's not Dan Campbell, like he's not going to be Big Galoot, he's not going to be the Lummox, so right. I'm just really curious, and also how that's going to blend in a city like Chicago. If you win, Chicago fans will be cool with it, but if you don't, we know the way Chicago fans are, you know, the area is very much touted as a blue collar city. We'll see if he matches that city's energy.
Yeah, we'll have to hide out somewhere with Bartman if they don't win after this, man.
It's just the same thing. We're just a beaten down community of people. Yeah. You know, if he ain't the one, well, it's okay. The McCaskies got our back. They will be sure to get somebody who will get it done, right?
I mean, we're also stretching this topic out in a bunch of different ways. Like we went from, you know, who do you trust the least to who's boom or bust, which is kind of a different thing. And then I think part of my rankings from a mental standpoint with Ben Johnson is I don't know that Ben Johnson, if they're not winning, connects with the team all the time, if he's more of the cerebral guy. I don't know if Aaron Glenn's going to work in New York and New Jersey. I know from this standpoint he'll work. He yells a lot. And he's very, like, in-your-face and honest. Fans will love that. Now, that'll be a honeymoon period of a couple of years. If they don't have 9 or 10 wins and they're not making the playoffs by year three, then everyone will be done with the yelling and the high energy and all that stuff. So, but it is pretty bad. It does tell you in this hiring cycle – that with the names that were available, the names that were hired, because I have Vrabel down low because I don't trust the Patriots organization, not Vrabel, but that the hire that I think is the least risky will be the Saints hire that hasn't been named yet.
Yeah, well.
Because I like the freshness of Kellen Moore, and I think the Kafka guy is actually kind of intriguing as well. There were just some other hires at the end where I was like, this isn't like very exhilarating.
Kellen Moore needs to be concentrating on a Super Bowl right now, man. So
it's all about his future.
That's already annoying.
That is already annoying. Well, otherwise, these guys never get a job. They can never, you know, you're on a Super Bowl team. You're there for life.
Good. Stay here. Get under the ring.
Adam Hill's coming up. We'll talk more about Pete Carroll, the staff he's building, and also the experience in and around the Super Bowl coming up next Sunday.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Watch the games tonight and through the weekend. Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Tremendous menu. The sportsbook's right there. 24/7 kiosk. 55-plus TV. Salerno's on the scene. Greg Salerno is on the scene. Finley Toyota Studios. Griffin Cofield in Reno at Lotus Reno. Adam Hill, I have no idea where he is right now. We're very confused. I know he's covering the fight this weekend, which is really weird because he's not really a boxing guy anymore, or he never was. But we'll get into Benavidez fighting this weekend. Adam, where are you?
Right now, I'm at my house. Finished watching. finished watching Yale stomp Princeton in a very pivotal Ivy League battle. So that was fun.
I was going to ask you about that. I saw some tweets earlier about the Princeton crowd if they were getting fired up for the game. So Yale won, huh?
Yeah, Princeton fans can go home upset, and more importantly, as you know, Princeton's coaching staff can go home upset and sorry, not sorry.
I don't know. You maybe explained it to me, but Mitch Henderson is the coach, right, of Princeton?
I don't use that man's name, but sure, yes.
We went to the Final Four. I think it was last year's Final Four, maybe the year before, Greg. And Adam will talk to anyone who's ever coached basketball, but his rivalry interest, because his brother played basketball at Yale, his rivalry interest will like usurp anything, and he does not want to talk to the Princeton coach. So go figure. Go figure.
Hey, man. Adam knows what's up.
Used to love the Bills. Hates him now. Hates Josh Allen. So once he decides, he decides.
Yeah, hate the fan base mostly.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So let's get the week that was with Pete Carroll. So I haven't had a chance to talk to you. The audience hasn't heard you, at least here, on Pete Carroll. First of all, the press conference, man, he had you guys in the palm of his hand. You were putty. You were all putty, laughing, getting a meal afterwards. Man, he played you guys.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if that was true.
It's not. But I just thought he got a lot of good reaction with his sense of humor. It seemed. I feel like press conferences of the past, like Josh McDaniels, it was awkward because he's awkward. I felt like with Pete Carroll, like everyone in the room felt comfortable and kind of good, at least at the beginning of this thing.
Well, I don't think a press conference, like people say, you know, somebody won a press conference. I don't think you can usually win a press conference. I just think the key is to not lose it. Like Liam Cohen was a disaster, like a complete and total disaster. And like, that's bad. You know, it's not good when that happens. Duval. Like, what? What are you doing?
It didn't make any sense.
So, I mean, that's not good. You can't have that. You know, there's something like Jonathan Gannon's last year was awful. Like, just terrible. You want to avoid that. You don't want to have that happen. And as long as you don't do that, I think you've done pretty well. I thought Pete Carroll, you know, did fine. I thought it was interesting because I thought John Spytek was really good too, although he did seem a bit nervous. He mentioned at one point, like, you know, Pete's up here just crushing this press conference, and I was like, all right. I mean, he's doing fine. I don't know what you can really take out of a press conference necessarily for the most part, but he got through it. And I thought he was funny and entertaining. And the other thing you don't want to be is bored. I think you were going to reference that with Josh McDaniels was boring when he had his. Like, there's nothing came out of it. So just don't be boring, don't be weird, and I think you've won the press conference, and I think that's what Pete Carroll did.
Adam, I'm kind of obsessed at this point with the Raiders finding a quarterback. And I was wondering, now that we know who the coach is and who everybody pretty much are they looking for more of a stop? I don't want to say stopgap, but like a veteran who they know can play right away. Or with a guy of Pete Carroll's age, would they be willing to, you know, draft a young guy and then, you know, work with them for a few years? Because I know Steve says I'm harping on the age thing too much, but it just seems like I don't know how long Pete plans on doing this. So would they go for an established guy already?
Yeah, I think Pete Carroll is planning on being on the job for 43 years. I think that's the plan. I think I was going to do an impression of somebody that used to do a show with Steve, the sports pig, RIP to him. But it was he used to say, what are they going to do? Both. Like I think that they're going to look in both directions. I think they're going to try to get a rookie. They're going to try to find somebody that they can develop and that can be the quarterback of the future and is going to be able to take them to the next level. And I think they're also going to try to bring in a veteran that maybe is the guy right now for the next season or two that you can try to compete with. And I think that's going to be the two choices. And I do think there's a place for Aiden O'Connell on the team. I think he's a guy who has been serviceable. He's been fine. I think I mentioned this before, like a really, really good locker room guy. Like, I think he's going to be there, and I think you could potentially have, like, a veteran and him compete for the starting job while you develop a rookie, for down the road, maybe the second half of the season or 2 years from now. I think all those things are possible, and I don't think anything's off the table for them. I've mentioned this a couple times, but I think with you guys that, 2023 – was the year that Tampa was supposed to tank. They're supposed to, you know, take their $80 million of dead cap and not be able to compete and just tank. And him and Jason Light and some of the other executives in Tampa kind of identified that, you know, Baker Mayfield was a guy worth taking a chance on. And a guy that they got very cheap. I think it was like $4 million. I have to go back and look. I know it was a pretty cheap deal. And they said, hey, nobody wants this guy. Like, maybe we can compete with him. And they went and found him. And I think, you know, a situation like that, like, I don't know who that guy would be this year. But if they're able to find one of those guys that nobody else wants and you get on a cheap deal, get one of them, get a rookie, get Aiden O'Connell, and then you have a pretty decent quarterback room.
Talking to Adam Hill, you know, you kind of answered part of this already. But obviously, if looking at the moves, Tom Brady definitely involved in some of this stuff. In your mind, do you have any names on the top of your head that you think would be like, I don't know if this is such thing as a Tom Brady guy or somebody that somebody he would be looking at to bring in?
Drew Bledsoe? Like as a quarterback, you're saying?
yeah, as a quarterback.
I mean, I don't know necessarily if Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady, when you look at him, you look more like who the rookie could be and potentially kind of mentoring him and helping. And we've talked about the previous relationship that Tom Brady has had a long, long-standing relationship with Shedeur Sanders. And does that mean he tries to bring him in and he believes in him? I don't know. I mean, does it mean, you know, out publicly and to Shedeur, he's telling him, yeah, we're getting you. And then behind the scenes, like, yeah, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know what he thinks of him, but he's been around him a lot. He has a better sense than almost anybody, I think, of what Shedeur Sanders can be. So I think that's certainly a name to, you know, pay attention to, and whether he does get aggressive to try to bring him in, how much he believes in Shedeur Sanders as a quarterback. So that's something to watch. But in terms of some of the veterans, I don't necessarily know. I don't know if he's, you know, tied in or connected or who he's liked when he's watched the game as a broadcaster. I know he says wow a lot when he's broadcasting games. So, you know, maybe there's a guy, maybe we can go back and track how many wows he said for certain quarterbacks throughout the year when they were playing and if he likes them based on that. But, yeah, I think, you know, the interesting name, I think the most interesting name in terms of the veterans that everybody has kind of discussed because of Pete Carroll is Russell Wilson. And I think, you know, I've heard very, very different things about where the relationship is. And we heard what Russell Wilson said last week, that they, you know, have bonded, they've come back together, that he had this big, you know, he kind of helped host this big party for him last year. Then I've heard some people behind the scenes say, absolutely not, it's not true. Pete Carroll doesn't like him, he doesn't want him. And even had somebody that would know go as far to tell me the other day that Pete Carroll was upset that Russell Wilson was even at that party. And the way Russell Wilson explained it, it was his party. Like, the whole thing is, it's wild. But it's definitely like a situation to monitor, like, how does he really feel about him? Because I think they'll have a chance to get him if they want him. So do they want him? And how much does Pete Carroll push for that?
Coordinator situation. First on defense.
PG. Back. Patrick Graham obviously had some opportunities. He had some interviews that he did outside the building in terms of being a head coach potentially. And he didn't get one of those jobs. And, you know, I think there was a couple of defensive coordinator jobs still out there. But, you know, it was interesting to hear Pete Carroll talk at the press conference where, you know, everybody asked him if he wanted to bring back a lot of his old coordinators. And he said, you know, I want to bring in some of the guys that already know me and already know what I like to do. I'd like to have some of them. I'd like to have some guys that I've never really worked with before at all because, you know, want to get those new ideas, like maybe things you haven't learned, maybe things you haven't heard, see how other teams do it, bring in their ideas. And then I also want to get some guys that have been here that have the institutional knowledge, you know, of the organization, of the city, of the players and all that. And I want to have a mix of all three of those different things. And we've seen him kind of stick to that with a lot of guys that have been here. I mean, we saw the Tom McMahon decision. We saw the Pete Carroll decision, or excuse me, the Patrick Graham decision. So I'm going to stick with it. And I would say, you know, defensively, they've been pretty good. And they also have a bunch of players that are free agents on the defensive side of the ball that like Patrick Graham a lot. So that could also be an olive branch to say, hey guys, stick around. Like we're gonna bring your coach back and keep him in the mix. And I think it's pretty interesting. Pete Carroll's a different defensive coach, but it sounds like he's gonna be willing to say, hey, what you did is working. I like it. Stick with it.
So no philosophical differences that could, you know, rise up middle of the season.
I don't think so. I mean, we'll see how they work together. I imagine they got together and they hit it off. And two very different people. You know, Pete Carroll, obviously, you know, just the high energy guy, the guy that we've seen and know very well. Patrick Graham, just a massive nerd. But you know, I think the guy is brilliant, and it'll be interesting, you know, have him still in the mix.
Offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people have assumed where they're going to go, and I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I just said that kind of mix of what kind of coaches Pete Carroll was talking about, having, you know, some guys that he works with, some guys that are new, and some guys that are around, and I think he's got the ones that have been around, so I think it's, you know, going to start looking at guys that he's worked with before, guys that he's familiar with, or people he's never met, but I think it's going to be the more familiar, and, you know, we will see what direction that they do end up going in, but I would be surprised if it's not a guy like Daryl Bevel that he's worked with before, that obviously has been around with Detroit, that's been around with Miami the last couple of years. He's got some, you know, I think he's got the stuff that he's done in the past, but also some of the injection of new ideas that he's worked with some of these new age offensive coordinators as well. So, yeah, I think that's a name to watch.
The Benavidez fight. What are you doing for coverage of this fight? Are you going to the fight tomorrow?
I am. I was at the press conference yesterday. Talked to Benavidez a little bit. You know, got his thoughts on where it's at. Obviously, there's been some, you know, some pretty explosive moments between these two leading up to the fight. But I think it's mostly, you know, you can usually tell when it's manufactured. I think in this case, it's pretty much manufactured. These are just two really, really good fighters. It's the kind of fight that, you know, people needed to hear about and know about, and maybe they needed some of that stuff to put it on the radar. But it's just a really, really good fight. And you know, the basic storyline, my, you know, the story I'm writing tomorrow for the Review Journal is, basically, these are two guys that were lobbying and demanding fights with Canelo at 168, and Canelo said, no, 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 I'm not fighting either of you. Canelo didn't say this. I'll say this. They're both too good for Canelo. He didn't want to fight them. Too much of a risk. Mm-hmm. So they both moved up, and now they're both at 175, and they're fighting each other. And you know, so no, not like you're taking the easy way out. You're actually, you know, taking on some really, really hard challenges here. Benavidez was saying, look, I'm going to fight, and I'm going to fight him. Then I'm going to fight one more time, unify every single belt, and then kind of trap Canelo to have every single belt in the two weight classes around him and say, hey, you got no other options. Now you have to fight me.
I like it. I like the approach. I got to close on this one. Adam Hill is with us. RJ and, of course, Cofield and Company. I forgot what show you're on.
Hill and his homies.
I think today, right now, it is Hill and his homies. I think Salerno has an issue, but I don't want to put words in his mouth about the halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Oh, boy.
Salerno, can you explain this to Adam Hill, who, by the way, he's a devotee of this individual, so fire away.
Oh, dude, look. It's not that I don't like the guy. That song, that ridiculous Drake song, that is played every, that beat's been played at every stadium, everywhere, every break, every intermission, everything on TV, every commercial has, I'm just like, enough already, dude. And that was going to be the halftime show. I would like to have moved on into somebody else. I feel like Kendrick's a little played out right now. But again, that doesn't mean he's not good. I just heard it 500 million thousand times. Not even a number, and I'm just kind of over it. That's all.
So your issue is he made too good of a song, and now he's gonna play it at the Super Bowl. That's
yes.
The issue.
Yes, it's like Chiefs fatigue. Okay. They're too good. I'm tired of it. Enough. I don't want to hear.
I mean,
so
I guess so. Isn't it fitting? I mean, it's like you're gonna have
Chiefs Eagles good point.
Again, and you know, have it on. You know, sorry that you know, it's not as an Eagles guy. Sorry, it's not Meek Mill. That's out there.
Right.
But look, I mean, Dreams and Nightmares is played anywhere that's cool all the time. One of the greatest songs ever made. We're going to hear that again? I mean, look, if you make a great song, it's going to be overplayed. That's just how it is.
I just, oh, God. All right, yeah,
also,
I get it.
And also, I'll tell you this. Not Like Us is not, I mean, it's not his best song. He's got an incredible catalog with some unbelievable, iconic songs that he's going to do. And, yeah, he's probably going to have to do the song. Not one of his best ones, but man, people really resonated. It really resonated with people, and people love it. So, sorry, he's gonna have to play a massive hit.
DNA is good. I'll give him that. DNA is good.
Yeah, good. Okay. I mean, it's unbelievable.
All right. It's good. It's very good. There you go.
You do realize, and I just like at this point, since the morons are using this for everything. Probably the last DEI halftime performance for years.
Oh, Jesus.
We're getting country the next 3 years.
Oh, God. I'd be scared of the flyover at this point.
Adam, we're getting country the next 3 years.
Well, hopefully not. We don't need that.
I think the griping about Kendrick Lamar is going to be so through the roof. The NFL will actually cave and give some people what they want.
I obviously hope not. It's going to be so absolutely incredible. Actually, one of the reasons I decided not to be there for the game and to come home was because I was like, you know what? The sound isn't always great in the stadium. I actually need to hear this like really well. Like, let me get out of there. I'll be hitting probably two of his shows on this tour coming up after the Super Bowl. So didn't need to be there for that. But yeah, I need to be locked in and focused. This is obviously the best part of the game.
Adam, we appreciate it. We'll see you in just a couple days in New Orleans. Big coverage of Radio Row and the Super Bowl in New Orleans. I'll say New Orleans five times, but thank you. Appreciate the info on the Raiders, too.
Sounds good. Talk to you guys.
There he is.
Later, man.
Adam Hill. I mean, if we're going to do this, I'm going to do it, right?
What?
With the DEI. If we're going to do it, I'm going to lean into it.
Oh, yeah. You might as well.
Because you guys were like, oh, God. I'm like, that's what we're doing.
No. It was because I was stopping myself from...
I know you were, and he had a long pause. He had a long pause as well. There's a lot of follow-up on that one. We close it out in the grab bag. We're live in Reno. We're live at Treasure Island Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Greg, I think I'm leaning at the leaning towards going to the burger place that wouldn't refire the burger.
Don't do it.
I did find a place, and I like the name because it sounds like that movie you were talking about earlier, Waiting. I did find a place called Shenanigans. I don't know why I like that.
It sounds like a fake name from like Office Space.
It does.
You know?
It does.
Let's go to Shenanigans.
If I walk in and the bartender's got a lot of flair on, then I'm in. Another 90s term, a lot of flair. Make sure your flair is up to par. Is it weird? Are you adventurous when you go look for food, or you kind of just go to the same place all the time?
I'm adventurous, but I try to order things that I know what they are, so I'm not disappointed.
Well, you know, I never followed up. The other day you were feeling kind of sick when we were doing the show. Did you have Indian food again for lunch?
Did I have what? Oh, no, not that day. I don't know what happened, man. I was like, I don't know how to say this on air, but like, you know, you ever watch the comic books where Cyclops, he has that visor on, and then when he takes it off, it's just like all over the place?
That was you?
Yeah. That was basically my...
That's painful. I get it.
Yeah, my I get it. Back. Yeah.
This is a weird urge tonight. I think I want some lamb. I don't know why.
I paused because I'm not sure the last time I ate lamb.
There's several Irish and English pubs in Reno, and I think I might go that route.
Hey, man, you do you.
We'll find out.
I like, for instance, you asked me this. So, like, if I go to an Italian restaurant, I get the chicken parm the first time I go there because I just know I like it.
There's some Italian places or Italian places that I could be looking at as well.
Yeah, I would go there rather.
The audience cares.
They do.
This is important. They need to know what I'm going to eat on it.
Some guy just came over. He's like, hey, man, what's Cofield going to eat today? Yeah. I said, hold on. We'll talk about it on the next break.
I didn't hear anything. Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
All right, real quick. I don't know if you clicked on this link, but tweet says, almost choked on my bagel from laughing. The graphic is apparently a Hal Steinbrenner quote about two of the new additions to the Yankees lineup. Did you see this one?
I did.
Hal says, I think Bellinger and Goldschmidt are going to make up for a good deal of Juan Soto's offense. Which I guess combined they could. Does that get you excited?
No. You know what it reminds me of? Like in Gladiator when there's like a good one. Like, you know, Marcus Aurelius, the original one. Mm-hmm. And then his stupid son takes over and ruins it and then Rome burns. That's what it reminds me of.
So Yankee Stadium, the Bronx is going to burn.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's burned before. It's a lot more serious than baseball when it was burning.
That's true.
I got to say it. I'm fired up that pitchers and catchers are going to be here in like a couple of weeks. I think this offseason has been awesome, and I love that the Dodgers, they haven't won as much as the Chiefs, but the Dodgers are kind of operating like the Chiefs. Like, we are going to scoop up everyone we can, and like, if you don't stop us, like if you hand us Xavier Worthy in the draft, oh well, then we're going to take him. I love that the Dodgers have gone out, and they've done exactly what I said every baseball team should do. Stop with the 4-year, $190 million deals on starting pitchers. get 15 closers, and watch how they go through the season and in the playoffs. Baseball to close it out. We'll see you.